now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week I'm joined by Patty Barkley, Matt Dickinson, and Mr. Tony Cascarino. Today we'll be discussing that goal at Old Trafford, Newcastle's win at Sunderland, and the Chris Hughton situation. Why are we even debating whether he should be sacked? And after some big events in Italy, we talk about the idea of video panels to punish those who cheat. So strap yourselves in and join us. Manchester United defeat Tottenham Hotspur and prove that even without Wayne Rooney, they're still in the run of things, and they may well be there till the very end. But we have to start with this business with Gomez and Mark Clattenburg and Nani. And I think for those who didn't see it, don't know what I'm talking about. Do I have a volunteer who can succinctly explain the sequence of events? Mr. Barkley.
Thank you.
Right. Basically, what happened was that Nani, with 10 minutes to go, Manchester United winning 1-0 against Tottenham, something like 10 minutes to go. Nani goes into the box. He appears to be fouled to the televiewer at least once by Yunus Kabul. He goes down. No penalty is awarded, but he, either through pique or through thinking he's got a penalty, handles the ball. The assumption, general assumption, seems to be, the lay assumption, is that a free kick will be given. Clattenburg, Mark Clattenburg, the referee, however, decides that play should continue in order, presumably, that Tottenham may have the optional advantage of a quick break on Manchester United. You would expect that the manager of Tottenham, Terry Redknapp, would be in favour of that rather than a stoppage in play. Aurelio Gomez, the Tottenham goalkeeper, spins the ball down under the impression that a free kick presumably has been awarded, walks back to prepare to clear it up the field. Nani comes in, looks at the referee and says, "Listen, have you stopped play? Can I kick the ball into the net?" The referee shrugs as if to say, "Well, if you want." Nani then kicks the ball into the net. 2-0 Manchester United, end of game. Harry Redknapp afterwards, instead of praising the referee for allowing advantage and lambasting Aurelio Gomez for not playing to the whistle, says the referee's a joke and blah, 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 and now he and his assistants are going to cook up a story to convince us that it wasn't the refereeing blunder of all time. I didn't see a refereeing blunder.
And now everyone knows why my 5 and 7-year-old looked particularly confused as we watched the game on Saturday and said, Daddy, what on earth is going on?
Yeah, we all did.
Well, Cass, it looked to me like, actually, I respectfully disagree that with Patty, that there was an enormous refereeing blunder. I mean, leaving aside, none of this would have happened if Gomez had played the whistle, and you learn in every single sport from the time you're a child, any sport that has a whistle, you play to it, and so on. But leaving all that aside for a second, and leaving aside also the sort of the Taliban interpretation of the rules and the referee's discretion and so on, there's a basic point here that part of the referee's job is to, and his assistants, is to make sure the game runs properly and fairly, and that the players know what's going on. It's obvious here the players did not know what was going on.
Well,
There's a couple of problems that I have. Is first of all that if an offence is committed and the ball's in midfield and it's in open play and the referee just says play on, it's an offence and the referee just carries on playing. That's not a problem. Now, handball's an offence. So are we going to determine between different offences? He allows play to go on. Gomez spins the ball, and as he does, he looks immediately to find someone quickly. He waves his arms to his team. He opens his arms up. Not, I don't believe, to say to the referee, can I take it? He's got nothing on. No Tottenham player or fullback has made an angle for him to get the ball. He wants to kick it quickly. It's not on. Nothing's on. So then he takes time. Within that time...
Sorry. So just to be clear on this, you're suggesting that the reason Gomez stood there and opened his arms wasn't because he was waiting for the free kick. It was because he looked up the pitch and he saw every single Tottenham player marked by an opponent?
Well, he saw that there was nothing on. His fullbacks hadn't become available. That's my interpretation, because that's immediate reaction of a footballer where they look to do it quickly, because he spins it down, like Paddy said. He goes to do it and thinks, there's nothing really on. I don't want to give it to someone who's going to be under pressure in a tight situation. He doesn't. Then he decides to take his time over it. Then Nani gets, you know, takes the opportunity of coming back and getting the ball and scoring.
I'm not sure I buy that, because Nani was behind him at the time, which meant that there were only nine outfield Manchester United players and 10 outfield Spurs players. Somebody must have been open. There must have been some option. I mean, and even there's 10 minutes to go. You put it in the air and you wait for something to happen.
A lot of players turn their back on the play.
Yeah, quite.
You know, you're talking, okay, 11, you're stating an obvious that actually doesn't work. In football, players, and especially fullbacks, turn their backs on the goalkeeper a lot and just run up the pitch. And that's what Gomez was looking for. He was looking to take it quickly. It wasn't on. Then he delays.
The obvious ball was asked to Okoto.
Yeah, and
he
wasn't on.
He wasn't looking for it.
So,
what about the idea of sportsmanship here? I mean, basically, Nani sees an opportunity, sticks it in, but I mean, we seem to be, you know, we're giving Gomez a hard time, we're giving Clattenburg a hard time. I mean, there's something that goes against natural justice about this goal, and the guy who is exploiting it is Nani, and shouldn't we be pointing a finger at him and saying, look, you know, if you want to win a game of football, let's try and win it fairly, let's try and win it properly.
Matt, can I just, there's something that I've always had in my mind about football as a sport. Now, we don't have the etiquette of golf. Football is riddled with cheating, taking advantage in every, from managers, from players, to everybody involved at football clubs. I've been part of it, and sometimes I used to think, why can't football be different? But it's pretty acceptable in football that you can be patted on the back from your colleagues if you cheated and got a penalty. That is what our sport is. I don't like it. Sometimes I'm embarrassed by football, but I've had to get to learn that is our game. It's very controversial. That's maybe the attraction for many people in football. Yep. They love the controversy of football because there is so much cheating that goes on. Not just players holding players at corners and fouling them and, you know, pretending to wane injury or just go over for a penalty. Conning, it's part of what football is.
There was an incident around 30 years ago when sportsmanship was much more fashionable than it is today, in which a Manchester United winger, a forerunner of Nani, crept up behind a goalkeeper, and as the goalkeeper, so that the goalkeeper obviously couldn't see him, and as the goalkeeper rolled the ball out, or I think sort of threw the ball into the air, this Manchester United winger flicked his foot round and put the ball into the net. The referee disallowed it for ungentlemanly conduct, and there was a massive furore from the public that brilliant piece of artfulness from George Best should have been allowed. Everyone said that. Football is a game. It's, you know, it's not... it's a game of not of cheating, but it's like a game of poker. It's a game in which you take your advantages.
No, but then equally, Paddy, when Paolo Di Canio was it? I think it was certainly at Everton, but when the goalie, who was prone.
That's completely different. That's
Paul Gerrard.
That's completely different. Of course, when there is an injury, either a physical injury or a sportsmanship in order. For example, the perfect example was the Arsenal one with Kanu, where Arsenal generously agreed to replay a match against Sheffield United because Mark Overmars had taken advantage of a piece
illicit advantage of a piece of sportsmanship. Gomez, on the other hand, wasn't offering anything to Manchester United that was thrown back in his face. He just made a mistake. Therefore, the issue of sportsmanship just doesn't come into it. It's nothing to do with sportsmanship,
We talk about mistakes, and it's, you know, we can criticize Nani for perhaps not displaying the greatest sportsmanship, and Gomez for being stupid and not playing to the whistle. I'm not letting the referees and their assistants off the hook this quickly. There was an obvious handball from Nani after he went down.
There
might have even have been a dive. Okay. Neither Simon Beck, who's standing 10 yards away on the sideline, can't see it, and Clattenburg, both of them can't see it, because when we saw, at least on the match of the day, guys, when they saw the conversation afterwards between Clattenburg and Beck, it seems pretty clear that Beck, who for reasons known only to him, raises his flag sort of 5 minutes later, he goes to Clattenburg and says, Nani handled it, and it appears as if Clattenburg says, yes, I know, I played advantage. That's what it appears that he says. Of course, we'll never know because these people aren't allowed to talk to the media.
Well,
and
that's the other thing that's come out of this. I mean, the ridiculous thing is the way that the officials ban the referees from coming anywhere near a microphone. I mean, we would all be. I mean, maybe we'd probably still be having this discussion, but we'd be having this discussion with a bit more knowledge and a bit more insight if Clattenburg had been allowed to come out and just explain his thought process, what he knew, when, why he made that decision. But then,
absolutely, because people are putting
paranoia.
We can only debate this by putting words in his mouth, which immediately lowers the tone of the debate.
Does it matter at all that? Because, right, Nani handled the ball, but he obviously didn't handle the ball to gain any kind of advantage.
No.
And I was wondering, and I'm not even sure referees allowed to do this, but unfortunately, Alice and the qualified referees in here, but I was wondering, is it possible that Clattenburg saw Nani handle the ball, but since it was obviously voluntary, but it wasn't voluntary in the sense to gain any kind of advantage?
Well, it was to gain advantage, because it's the classic way of a player who thinks he's been fouled. He thinks if I grab the ball, then it puts the referee on the spot to make a hard decision. So he's done it because it's a way of saying, I've been fouled, you need to give me a penalty, and just to prove the point, I'm going to... That's what players do all the time, isn't it?
It's a very dangerous game.
Are we going to assume then that he should have really give a goal, but still yellow card him for handling the ball?
No, he shouldn't have given... What he should have done, my personal opinion, is up the pitch, if you play advantage... I mean, the rules of playing advantage... This is another whole issue that... I don't think people fully understand, right? Now, advantage isn't a law of the game. There's no advantage rule. Mm. It's a principle. It's laid out.
It's a common sense principle.
Well, no, I know this because I went... No, it's not common sense. It's FIFA rules. I know this because I spent time on the FIFA website last night.
Before you carry on, Gab, I'll ask you a question. Do you believe that every referee knows every law in the book?
Yes.
You do?
Well, every top-flight professional
I know
referee.
Loads of footballers who don't know hardly any rules. And they play their game, and I don't know many sports where their own sportsmen, golfers will know most of the rules. There's always a grey area.
The great thing about football is that our laws of the game are actually very, very simple and very, very short compared to the rule books in most other sports, and makes them more accessible. But under Article 5 of the laws of the game, it says the referee... puts it as the referee's power, the ability to pay to apply the principal advantage. And it's interesting because what I didn't know is that they have four criteria which they're asking the referee to consider when granting this at their absolute and total discretion. They don't have to do this. Mm-hmm. And I almost wonder if it's not giving the referee a little too much power. But they have to take into account the severity of the offense. In other words, if Cascarino goes and bites Barkley's head off, then even if Barkley's team gets an advantage, you got to go back and punish Cascarino. They have to take into condition the atmosphere of the game, which I don't quite know what that means, but maybe if it's at Old Trafford, you don't give the advantage against Manchester United. They have to take into account where it happens on the pitch, the position, the further away it is from the goal, the less likely you're supposed to, the less likely that advantage will be granted.
Yes.
And finally, they're supposed to take into account how likely is it that they're going to be in a better position. Now,
this is a classic example of the absolute uselessness of every single piece of FIFA guidance to left.
This is a FIFA guidance. This is the laws of the game. Article 5. That it's under the Article 5, the section entitled "The Referee," and there's a little section in there where they discuss the criteria for applying advantage. And I'm sorry, in my opinion, Mark Clattenburg clearly, on two of those 4 points, position on the pitch and the likelihood of gaining an advantage, he does not do his job. Nor does he do his job. He's supposed to extend his arms out and make it very clear to the players that he is granting advantage, if that's what he's doing. Instead, he's 40 yards up the pitch, and it's obvious the message did not get through to his own players, and probably not to his linesman either, because otherwise he wouldn't have raised his flag. Ha! You've all fallen silent. Advantage, Marcotti. Let's move on. How about the Tyne-Wear Derby? No George Culkin, but we can all get together and share the excitement here. Newcastle roll 5-1. I thought it was embarrassingly one-sided. I just finished telling people that I thought Steve Bruce was on the up and establishing himself as the best English manager under the age of 60. And then you get this. I thought it was just carnage out there. But before we get into all that, I want to know, Chris Hughton, this business with him, he's got 2 games to save his job. Is this just all an excuse because he's actually way underpaid because he's still in his assistant coach or whatever his title was before? He's still on those wages and he wants a fair or what he considers to be a fair Premier League wage, and it's all part of the negotiation, so now he's under pressure? Or has he actually done something wrong? Dicko.
I think he's been an underpaid manager for a while, certainly, and you know, compared to his Premiership peers, I'm sure he's underpaid. But then equally, you know, he's a guy who also has been sort of grateful for the job. So it's that one just comes down to a straight negotiation between him and the boss. How much did they want him? Which I guess is now a lot more than they possibly did a week ago. But like, I'll be honest, I didn't think Chris Hughton would be the guy to lead Newcastle for the next 2 or 3 years in the Premiership. I thought they would struggle, and I thought he would probably be out of a job by Christmas. I'm still not convinced he's the man to lead them onwards and upwards, climbing up the table. But you know, the guy's done he's doing an okay job. And it seems fair for him to say, I need to sort out my future. I want to be paid a fair crack for doing a big job. If you're going to back me, then show me the money.
Cassie, you're going to defend your old teammate?
Yeah, I went to do a TV gig with Chris in just after the rain with Martin Jol, finished with Tottenham. And I said to him, what are you going to be doing, Chris? He said, I'm looking to find a manager's job. Maybe Brentford has got a bit of interest. I'm struggling. And he said, I'm really finding it difficult. And Matt just touched on that, you know, he was quite fortunate. And he was fortunate with the circumstances to get the Newcastle job. But let's not kid ourselves. Chris has done an amazing job there, I think. Because if you watched the game yesterday and you watched how the team's commitment, desire, hunger, organisation, he's playing with Amiobi and Carroll up front, where everybody hates big centre-forwards, it's seemingly in the modern game. And if you have one, you can only play one. He played two. He's played, you see the rejuvenated Joey Barton, who's gone from, who I thought was a very good player at Man City, to a complete loose cannon at Newcastle, completely went out of sorts. And Chris has seemingly turned him round into a decent footballer again, because he is Joey Barton, a decent footballer. And I look at that team, I look at Nolan, I think, Nolan, mediocre, average Premiership player who can get a goal. He's that type of player. But again, yesterday, yes, it was Sunderland and they were very, very poor. But I look at that team, I watched them at Everton, I thought they were superb when they won at Everton, for everyone on the pitch. He's also had the added losing Ben Arfa, the injury to probably his...
No, we don't know much about him, so let's who's Ben Arfa? We don't know much about Ben Arfa, do we?
But again, it's a player who's talented, came in. I think Chris has got a team together. We cannot even dream of thinking that Newcastle are going to be a top four team. They haven't spent anything. Of any, you know, look at their team. There's not any money been funded for any players that were Chris has since had this year. To me, he's got the best out of what he's got. And I didn't think he'd be, sorry, Matt, I didn't think he'd be a manager. I thought Chris was just such a lovely guy that players would walk all over him. That has clearly not been the case.
Dicker. Well, that's interesting, your final point, because the big worry I had for him this season was that, you know, that the story came through pretty loud and clear that last season that the dressing room had a huge sway. I mean, there was, there was a little cabal of a few players, Nolan included in them, who were effectively a sort of little management team in themselves with Shea Given when he was there. And my worry was that that Houghton was sort of allowing dressing room power to be too influential. And like Tony says, there was that fear that he was going to be sort of walked over. Now, there don't seem to be signs of it this season. I mean, Carroll still remains a walking controversy. But, you know, that performance seemed to show players responding to a manager, playing for a manager. So far, the signs are good. But, I'm not entirely ruling out the fact that Chris Houghton... it could be a victim of player power were it to go the other way.
Paddy, it seems to me that Newcastle haven't, certainly recently haven't spent large amounts of money, as Dicko said. They sort of retrenched. And mm-hmm. I personally think if you walk up to Ashley with a decent offer, you can walk away with a club. Mm-hmm. I could see getting rid of Houghton if you were going to launch onto the make a run at the top four or whatever. But if you're not going to.
Junction at platform. Passengers, by board, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And we kind of actually learned a few things here. And one of the things I think that we've learned is that managers are perhaps somewhat overrated and certainly overpaid, because if Chris Houghton, who nobody believed in, mm-hmm. When he got the job and was kind of like forgotten, and paid a lot less than Shearer and JFK and all the guys who came before him, he goes in, he does very well, he wins the championship, he's got them in the top 10. Maybe it kind of shows that maybe if you find a good person like Chris Houghton, you don't need to go and pay him $3 million, yes, and give him a 3-year contract.
The situation of Chris Houghton proves that the lessons of it, I think, are twofold. One, management is a job for a manager. It's not a job for a failed TV pundit who happened to be a magnificent centre forward.
You having a go at Cascarino here? Is that what it is?
No, I'm thinking of a Geordie centre-forward.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Who's often... That's a very valid point that Paddy's made. Because if
Chris Houghton has learned the job.
Well, yes, but if it was a name that had achieved the same success and forget about who they were, that name would have had the job by now. If Alan Shearer had that opportunity and done the same, exactly the same, he would have signed a 3 or 4 or 5 year contract with Newcastle. That is no shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, and that's one thing. The football management is not when choosing a manager, you should not go stargazing. You should look at who knows how to coach and how to manage people. Houghton, I agree. I mean, I'm like everybody else. I made the mistake of thinking nice guy, therefore cannot be a manager. at any level, perhaps. But he is still a nice guy, and he's doing extremely well in management. And you know, there's nothing broken at Newcastle. You know, what is there to fix?
Taylor's chin, I think, or his jaw.
Apparently, I mean,
almost nothing.
More broadly on Newcastle, do we agree that right now the club remains in a kind of holding pattern where, you know, Ashley is making sure that they don't go bust, but he's obviously not going to put more money into the club. You know, we're not going to see that ambition. Is that okay? I mean, is this Newcastle's future as a mid-table club? Is this fine?
Ooh, well, I think it's fine. I mean, at least I don't think they're Barcelona anymore. I mean, I did laugh at the when I know Allardyce made some mistakes at Newcastle, but there was the sort of the biggest stick to beat him would seem to be this idea that they were playing functional football, as if, you know, Geordie fan people were actually saying with a serious face, you know, Geordies expect more than that. As if they're sort of, you know, in this bloodline from Real Madrid or Barcelona.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact is Newcastle is a, you know, there are a few better sites than the stadium up on the hill. It's a great stadium to go and watch football in. There is some soul and tradition about the club. But the idea that they're sort of entitled to anything more or better than that doesn't seem to be rooted in very much at all, if you ask me. I mean, they've got a big fan base, which obviously, and a big stadium, which potentially gives them the capabilities of being a top club. But, you know, that takes an awful lot of shrewd management on and off the field to capitalise on that.
A word on Sunderland. Steve Bruce afterwards came out and apologized and said it was an awful performance, blah, blah, blah. I have to say, against my better judgment, I kind of like the guy. I mean, I like the fact that he came out and took it on the chin. I mean,
he's got a few.
Well, you know, one thing we have in common, but he doesn't. You know, he could have gone out and said, you know, we had a bad day. He could have gone out and said, you know, so and so was missing. This guy was hurt and so on. But he didn't. Did we just catch Steve Bruce on a good day? Did he have no alternative?
I think he's always been that type of guy. He likes to confront things face on. How else? I mean, there are a lot of managers that will give out weak excuses of why they lost. And he basically said, we were boys and they were men. They wanted it more. They had more desire and hunger. We couldn't match them. You know, everything that was there for every fan and every viewer on the TV to watch was obvious. It was obvious. They were second best in every department.
Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, Juventus played Bologna. Milos Krasic, the new Pavel Nedved, as some people see him, even though the guy's Serbian, breaks into the box, takes on the defender, Bortanova, and goes down. Now, there's plenty of replays of this on YouTube. For those who haven't seen it, there's very little question that there wasn't no contact, and also, you know, he goes down and does a little celebration when he goes down. He punches his fist into the ground. He's very happy that he's won a penalty. God already intervened and punished him for his diving because Vincenzo Iaquinta then missed the penalty and the game finished 0-0. But the interesting thing was this. We have a law in the books in Italy where a video panel can retroactively pick out incidents of diving and cheating where a referee was conned, and they can hold a disciplinary hearing and punish a player with a two-match ban, which is what happened with Krasic here. Sounds like a good idea in principle.
Mm.
Is it in real life, Patty?
Yes, I absolutely think so. I think that video review should be used to exonerate players it should work both ways. It should be, you know, used to relieve people of suspensions. I also think it should be done in public. I think the video review should be done every Monday or whenever it is, and televised live or highlights or whatever. We should be able to see the deliberations of the people who make the decisions. I can't see any argument against it.
Glasnost Paddy here.
I've always believed that. I've been writing this for 30 years. I cannot see the problem with it. I think that an awful lot of things are not shown on television in football, which if purely by putting a camera in tunnels, for example, you know, we'd have got around a lot of the problems we used to have in the game. Mm. But I just couldn't agree more. I mean, I believe also that that video evidence should be used by the fourth official during every match. Mm. I just can't see an argument against it. Referees
on this specific issue, though. The issue here is you know, we're not talking about fourth official replays.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking about a panel going back and correcting, so to speak, a referee's decision.
Absolutely. I think it should be, as long as it's done by a panel which includes fully qualified referees. It shouldn't be done by a panel of Tony Cascarino and me. I mean, it should be done by people who actually know the laws of the game and inside out and are paid for that knowledge.
Cass, one of the issues here with this diving thing that we've run into, or something we ran into in Italy, is that in the past 4 years, it's been applied several times, but this is only the second time that an appeal was successfully was turned down, and part of on a diving one. They've done other ones with handballs, but part of the problem is that what they found is that it's actually very difficult to establish the intent to con the referee. So just because there's no contact, obviously, doesn't mean that there wasn't a foul.
Quite right.
And so it becomes really difficult to establish whether there was an infraction committed. As a striker, can you look and tell immediately if somebody's diving?
Well, I'd like to think I'm not a bad judge at, you know, seeing someone try to con a referee. First of all, I do particularly think it's a fantastic thing for football, because if you start banning people for committing offences, then managers will go to players during the week and say, I'm going to lose you for games if you do that. So you can't do that. So it's a twofold. It makes it even better, makes the game more honest, which we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
The only issue, and I might be way off the ball here, I might be completely off the ball, and certainly Paddy and Matt will and yourself will know more, but I do wonder if some ridiculous way, if we did go down that road and we did, would ever a player challenge via a lawyer to say that I didn't improve and go to court, as daft as it sounds, because I sometimes think like that about football now. I think, is there going to be a player one day who's actually going to challenge that decision and say, that was unfair, how can you prove that I dived and I'm getting suspension? That's what I start to get about a bit.
It would probably be quite easy to win a slander case.
Yeah, a slander case against your character, against you.
Because you...
I've actually looked into this. What I was told was that when you're a professional footballer, you agree to be bound by certain regulations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these govern things like suspensions and so on, and certain obligations.
Yeah.
And unless this is somehow affecting your career and your reputation, because the tribunal doesn't go and say, you know, Krasic is a cheat and a scumbag and whatever and a Serb. They come out and they say, on this occasion, Krasic did this, or is what the court has found. So it's not something that, and there is an appeals process, so it's not something that, you know, remains a stain on his character for life.
I think the critical thing is just to establish the principle that, you know, the local FA, whether it's Italy here, but in England, reserves the right to, or has the right to get the tape out and say, look, here's a clear infraction, and we're gonna punish. I mean, this has been one of those great sort of loophole areas that FIFA has allowed to build up over the years. Where I know the Scottish FA challenged it recently, and under Gordon Smith, and got themselves slightly legally tied in knots over it, because, you know, FIFA, you know, this is the lovely Blatter, hates this idea of sort of hindsight officiating, but
yes.
I mean, you know, clearly, if there are blatant infractions, they should be.
Yeah,
the critical thing here to be established, and which is, say, Italy has marched along, is to establish, you know, is to get some sense into the rules, and as Paddy has rightly said, we need to establish common sense more above everything,
and we also need to establish quite clearly what we mean by diving. If a player pulls your shirt back and thereby obtains an advantage by slowing you down when he is he's quicker than you and therefore deserves to get to the ball first, are you entitled then to go down when you don't need to? In my opinion, you are. Other people may say, no, you should just take it like a man and lose the chance. Is shirt pulling better than diving? I don't think so. I think the guy who does the first infraction of the rules, you know, basically, if you start a fight, you should be willing to finish it. And I think that if you tug a guy's shirt, he's entitled to dive. I don't see any problem with that at all. Now, I haven't seen the Krasic case, but I'd be very, very, very wary of, and I think it would be anti-bad for football, if players who dived when arguably they're entitled to, then got banned two games. And the guy who tugs his shirt and cheats just as blatantly gets away scot-free.
Let me show you, this is not the case. The defender's standing there, Krasic is running at him, basically runs past him and falls over.
I have in mind the Nani and Yunus Kabul. Now, Yunus Kabul twice impedes Nani. Nani then arguably goes down when he doesn't need to. And everybody's overlooked this.
Why can't we use then, just if it's so blatantly obvious, why can't we punish the ones that are so obvious?
Yeah,
well, you know, there's stealing a pen and robbing a bank. There is a very grey area.
That's a difficulty. I mean, they said this tribunal has been enforcing it for about 4 years, and they said this is only the second diving offence that, you know, they've done offences where, you know, a player scored a goal with his hand and then gone off to celebrate. Mm. You know, that kind of cheating that, you know, they've caught and they've punished successfully, but rightly so. But what I find very interesting, though, is, Dicko, the point you made, that Scotland wanted to do this, but FIFA wouldn't let them. And I don't quite know, but in Italy, we have both this kind of tribunal, which FIFA supposedly doesn't allow, and we also have goal line technology in one stadium, in Udine, which FIFA also supposedly doesn't allow. Are we just allowed to do it because we've won the World Cup four times and the rest of you guys haven't?
That's a very good question. This is going to admit ignorance. You've got goal line technology in the stadium.
Yeah, in Udine, it's a trial which has been going on for about 4 years, and the first 2 years of which they actually didn't tell anybody that it was there, but they've got sensors on the goal lines.
No, they didn't have a single goal line incident, you're going to say. No, they've been waiting 4 years to get one.
Yeah, exactly, pretty much. No, funnily enough, they had one last week. I mean, but I think basically the goal line technology is there. They supposedly haven't used it. They had one last week, actually, and it wasn't applied during the game because the referee, even though it was difficult to spot, somehow got it right. And then afterwards, they showed all the evidence. Oh, look, he was right. Supposedly, the referee wasn't told in real time during the game. I don't know. But it does seem to me, there's one thing I never quite get, because I'm assuming that if we walk out of here today and we go ask the Premier League, hey, guys, why don't you guys have this, you know, retroactive video panel? They would say, well, FIFA would never allow it.
We've had this discussion with the FA a zillion times, and they say, well, it's, you know, this whole idea of if the referee sees the incident is the critical definition of something you cannot go retrospectively look at. If the referee has seen, you know, even if the referee sort of saw someone punch someone in the face and it turned out to be something completely different, if his eyes have convinced him of something, then we're not allowed to question it in any way. Now, the RFA, particularly at a time when, this is how ridiculous football gets, at a time when we are bidding for a World Cup, in particular, the FA will not do anything that might in any tiny shape or form annoy Sepp Blatter, so therefore we wouldn't deem of challenging it in the last couple of years because that might be seen to be troublemaking.
But in a month, of course, that won't apply.
Exactly. Time for some quick hits, and Tony Cascarino, I know you haven't done this in a while, so just so you know, I will ask a question, and then while you answer, if you go over 25 seconds, I will blow this duck whistle, like so. Right, Chelsea leave it very, very late to get 3 points at Blackburn in a game that they could very well have lost. Paddy, there's two ways to read this. Chelsea are great and wonderful because they know how to play badly and win, or Chelsea are actually on the slide because, well, Blackburn deserve the 3 points. Which side are you on?
I go for the former option. Chelsea are champions in waiting because they know how to play badly and win. I do agree, though, Blackburn deserved more than they got.
According to reports, former FA chief executive Brian Barrick is being lined up to take over as Liverpool chief executive. Dicko, Barrick was responsible for the car crash that was ITV Digital, as well as the appointments of Steve McLaren and Fabio Capello to the England job, which some people might say are good ideas, others less so. What's your verdict?
He was a pretty middling FA chief executive, to be honest. He used to talk about how much he loved the game as if that was enough. He made some pretty ordinary decisions. Satanta deal you could have thrown in there as well. If I was a Liverpool fan, I would not be getting excited about this.
The second defeat in 2 weeks for Man City. Different circumstances, of course, for the two defeats, but some suggestion that Mancini once again in trouble, Carlos Tevez wants to leave, Yaya Toure fighting with teammates and so on. Is it as bad as some people make it out to be, Cass?
Well, they were indifferent when they won at Blackpool. Wasn't impressed with them that day. Tevez is a massive loss to them because he's been so instrumental in getting them goals. Adebayor comes back in the team. He's involved with company in a problem. Mancini's got his work cut out. I think that's without any shadow of a doubt. I'd be amazed if he does last till Christmas. I really was. I think their away performances this year have been pretty negative for a team with so much quality.
Top four, baby. Top four.
Right, Gab, one for you. You're good at asking the questions. Now you've got to answer one, because Antonio Cassano is at it again. Sampdoria have begun proceedings to cancel his contract after he called the club chairman a feces-covered old man. Now, why did he do that? And if he leaves, should any of the big clubs be interested?
Well, the short answer is he did it because he's mentally unbalanced and somewhat insane. He did apologize for it. The basis of this is that the club chairman said, hey, can you go pick up this prize that these fans have given you? He said, I'm not going because I don't like that hotel and you're disgusting, so-and-so, and just went nuts and had a go at the club president, who's 74 years old. I don't think any club should go be moving for Cassano because he's a liability. He makes more than 100 grand a week. And however talented he is, he can go off at any second. And I don't think he's great for the dressing room. And on top of that, while he did apologize...
Sorry, that was my buzzer. I only have 20. That's got to be over 25 seconds.
We was all queuing up to do it, Matt.
Thanks for joining us. You can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find all the news, your gossip, your analysis, and also our web chats. I do mine on Mondays. Ollie K does his on Wednesdays, and we have others dotted throughout the sporting week. Now, you can also write to us. It's gamepodcast@timesonline.co.uk. Mr. Michael Warren wrote in a while back criticizing Tony Evans. Michael, if you're still listening to us, we will read your email on the air when Tony's in the studio so he can actually respond. We also have another email here today, this week, from Mr. Dean Walkie, who in fact thanks Tony Evans for mentioning Paul Tisdale as one of England's talented young managers. Of course, he's done very well at Exeter City. And funny enough, we always talk about up-and-coming English managers. Tisdale is English, but he's actually born in Malta. Maybe that's why he's so good. So thank you for your email. And, of course, you can always contact us, as I said, at gamepodcast@timesonline.co.uk. Next week, I'll be appearing from a remote location called New York City, and there will be somebody else in the chair. But I'll still be there.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.